Welcome to the premiere episode of Sanity Lounge. Tonight's guest will feature the creators of the show, Brian Leppo and Mike Davis. Brian Leppo has spent 30 years obsessing over the riddle of rhythm. Coupled with his lifelong love of film and primal pull towards philosophy, he has had the ultimate crash course in sanity. Mike Davis has been a lifelong artist with a penchant for sculpture and an incredible gift for detailed painting. His love of film goes deep with creature creations and film history. Both men have been best friends since 1992, attending hundreds of concerts, films, hellscapes, and heartbreaks together, eventually landing face-to-face with themselves and their own sanity. This is Sanity Lounge.
Okay, so welcome to Sanity Lounge. This is going to be our inaugural episode.
I'm so excited.
It's a long time coming.
It's ridiculous.
Fun. So this episode, we're just going to talk a little bit about who we have coming up guest-wise, and we're going to do a little deep dive interview on each other just to get to know each other better. Even though we've been friends for 35 years, we may not know each other as well as we think we do.
That's
and
right.
You don't know us at all.
Right.
Yet.
Right. This is for ourselves as well as the audience, mostly the audience, because, you know, who the hell are we? Nobody. But
I am Davis. That is Leppo.
Nice to meet you. Welcome to Sanity Lounge. In a world of lunacy, we will be your island of sanity, coming to you live from the very sane city of Baltimore.
Yeah.
The outskirts, you know.
Slight outskirts.
Slight outskirts. Now, we love Baltimore, and that's what we're about at Sanity Lounge. We're going to be talking about, we're going to be talking about artists in general. Eventually, you know, we'll expand, but we really want to focus on Baltimore culture, Baltimore arts, film, music, art, you know, anything we can think of.
Exactly. We have a lot of cool guests lined up. Brian is a drum aficionado and a drummer himself, and he wants to do a little deep dive discussions with several of the local drummers around the area who are in some of my favorite bands. Some of the guys we have coming up are Ricky Wise. We're going to have Ricky Wise here in the studio.
Incredible local drummer. I've never met him, but he's a local legend. Very excited about him. We got Tristan Gilbert is coming up.
Sweet Lita, Lowercase Blues. Fantastic guy.
Davis told you about me. Let me real quick say, Davis is a sculptor and local music aficionado. And
we try,
right? So he brings that to the table. So a lot of these people we're getting, a lot of these great guests, are thanks to the Davises.
Me and my wife travel around the city a lot and go see as much local music as we possibly can. And there is a lot of it, and we want to expose it to everyone and give them a platform themselves to talk about themselves and allow us to get to know them better. And at the same time, allowing you to get to know them better.
And hopefully expose them to a larger audience.
Yeah.
And then in symbiosis, we will then be exposed to a larger audience.
Yep.
Because one of my main goals here at Sanity Lounge is to unite the world under drums. It sounds obnoxious. I understand.
He has a plan.
But stick with me, right? I don't, you know, just
and
stick
I'm
with
all,
me.
I'm man. All for it.
Yeah.
It's a good plan.
Who else do we? Okay. Oh.
Oh. This is my favorite. So when we decided to get this going, and we were going to start having live bands in here to do some recording and interview out calls, they were my first choice. Melissa and Britt, they're fantastic. Justin on the drums.
My man Justin Kruger and Melissa and Britt. Yeah. It's like
great.
I'm starstruck a little bit, even though it's a little bit, you know, but. You know, like, I mean, what incredible women.
They're gonna blow your mind with their vocal range and abilities.
They do.
They're great, yeah.
I mean, they're local badasses, and, you know, soon, hopefully, to be nationwide. And
they're going to be in here soon.
Yep.
Another guy we have coming in is Joe Stamboni. Ryan's excited to talk to this guy.
He's very excited.
It's going to be a fun one.
Yeah, because he's the right age and he's the right, you know, he's a fun guy. Obviously, we know him. We don't know him really personally, but the public at large may know him from the 98
Rock. How
is
that? Yeah.
The 98 Rock Morning Show. He's the producer, the young producer there right now. But he's a real fun cat and we've communicated with him. And he's a drummer. And, you know, he kind of jives with a little bit of what my vibe is. And I just have a feeling it's going to be a great, it's going to be a great talk.
Yeah, it's awesome. You know? And he was thrown our way by a friend of a friend.
Right.
My old neighbor, Owen, set us up.
All right. At this point in the show, Woe Davis, I think we ought to take a turn to the questions.
And, sounds like a plan.
Yeah. And you, I'm going to do you first because, you know, I'm just feeling saucy.
Okay.
And, you know, that's how
sounds good. Let's see.
All right. So tell the people a brief, if someone had a brief synopsis of Woe Davis at this point in your life, what would you say?
A brief synopsis of me. So over the last, what year? 2024. I guess over the last 6 years, I've kind of really started honing my art skills. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I've never really considered myself an artist, but I've always been artistic. My mother was a painter, a very good painter. So I've always had like an artistic ability I would say I got from her. But in 2018, I mean, I don't know if this is a synopsis of me, but it is like, cause it's what I do now. So in 2018, I was commissioned to create Edgar Allan Poe for the International Poe Fest in Baltimore.
Right.
This is something that needed a sculpture of Poe and then a body, a corpse.
Right. I remember, you know, when you told us about this and we're like, are you kidding me?
So
what an incredible gig, babe.
The years leading up to 2018, I would watch YouTube videos. I've been very much into the Predator, and I would watch YouTube videos of just how to make stuff, like dreaming and fantasizing about like what. I wish I could just do that. And
right.
Then one day, I was asked to create an Edgar Allan Poe bust, and I was like, "Well, okay, I'll give it a shot. I've never really done that before." And as a backup plan, I started Googling Edgar Allan Poe masks, busts, nothing existed that
right.
looked worth a shit.
Right.
So I sat down and had at it, and I pulled it off.
Right. I remember
being pretty good.
I remember being worried because you have always been a badass artist your whole life. I mean, you've always been very meticulous, very incredibly artistically gifted. Mm-hmm. I guess because of Mama Joanne.
Yeah,
we love her. But I remember being like, you know, I believe in you, mm-hmm. but I shared in your nerves because I'm like, you know, have you done this? You're like, no. And I'm like,
it was a crazy time too, because this started in July and I think I officially started the sculpture in August. And my deadline was like mid September.
Yeah.
To like learn how to sculpt, mold, cast in silicone, like all these things that I've never done that I've now done a lot of and enjoy.
Right.
So the Poe thing I'm really proud of. That was a very humbling experience. And 2022 Poe House commissioned me to make Virginia for the bicentennial of her birth. That's Edgar Allan Poe's wife.
Ice. Okay.
And first cousin.
Okay.
It was 170 years ago. Like
who amongst us?
Yeah, nobody really knows, but I like to believe that their relationship was more companionship than sexual. They didn't have children. That's just what I believe.
Yeah.
I don't think no rhyme or reason. I mean, there's no proof. There's nothing. So that's what I believe and that's what I like. But
and
yes.
We don't judge here at Sanity Lounge, you know?
So, yeah. So the idea was to create Virginia for the bicentennial of her birth. So I made a bust of Virginia that lays in a coffin. Both of these bodies lay in a coffin. They were at Westminster Hall for the last 3 years, which is where they're buried, which made it real surreal.
Yeah, that's awesome, dude. I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah, I love it.
Like, not just Edgar Allan, but the wife. And then now, and you're involved with Poe Fest every year. You're like a legend down there rocking. We got these busts. Now, the bust that we have right here is just a miniature.
Is a miniature.
And that's not of the body, right?
That's where I started learning another new skill. I took my Poe head that I had molded.
Right.
And made another mold of it, poured clay into it, and re-sculpted him into a live version of Poe, which was a 24-inch tall bust.
Okay, that's what Poe. I remember. Okay.
So the little miniature versions that we have here are a just smaller version. They were like more, I was trying to like just sell them to people who wanted them, but the 24-inch version was 3D scanned, shrunk down, and then 3D printed, and then I molded that, and amazing. Now I cast them in stone, a stone type product. And then I hand paint them all in monochrome to make them look black and white, and then just plain white. But I prefer doing in monochrome. I love the look of it, and it just makes it look authentic and black and white, and I love it.
That's incredible.
Yeah, and then over the years, I've gotten into the Predator world, which is a crazy world.
As we can see behind you. Now, just let's hover here for a second. you know, to the person just going by, you have three heads of Predators, and you...
I painted all of these.
Right. And you added the teeth onto them. You made your own dreads and
I make the dreads and I sell them all over the world. It's kind of wild.
It's so crazy.
It's a weird world I live in.
I mean, yeah, it's unbelievable. And in my head, like the Ice Predator is your concept.
Yeah,
right?
I love that guy.
To your, I guess it would be the audience right screen is the Ice Predator. And your painting skills are unbelievable.
Yeah, thanks, man.
And then my favorite is the Darth Maul.
Yeah, the Darth Maul. That was just a thought that came to me. I was like, that's the ultimate crossover.
Yeah, I feel like they're missing it.
A Sith Predator, but I didn't come up with like a custom Sith paint. I was just like, I'm just going to make a Darth Maul Predator, and I love him.
Yeah,
he's tough as shit.
It seems right, you know? Like, it seems like it's a match made in
yeah,
heaven.
So that, and then I mean, just to continue on, like, and that's this has ended up being a long answer to your question.
That's all right, dude.
I got a lot going on. Yeah, I'm kind of a basket case, and I'm all over the place. But I have the sculpting, the art stuff that I love doing. I'll just briefly run through it. I'm more or less partnered with a company in the UK called Polyprops to bring their products to the States. So I sell them, which is cosplay supplies, a very specialized type of paint that's flexible, that's designed for foam armor builds and foam smithing in the cosplay world.
Now,
and
that
the
means
film and television industry.
If I'm one of those dudes, which I am, if I wasn't broke, but if I'm one of those dudes who wants to create like a X-Men outfit or something, that's what we're talking
about.
You
would use my paints. I have it's primers, brushable paints. There, I have straight acrylics, which aren't really designed for the foam, but they're very highly pigmented paints, very specialized paints. But the claim to fame is the flexible line of paint called Hexflex. The Hexflex primers, the Hexflex paints, and they have Hexflex. Well, we have, I should say now, we have Hexflex aerosols, which are flexible aerosol paints, which nobody else has, which is awesome.
I bet you that's badass.
Yeah, it's cool. They make cool colors, metallic color, steel, gunmetal, bronze, gold, and then a whole range of stuff. But that's pretty wild. That's only been going on since really December.
Right.
But so it's very early stages, but it's something that I'm focusing on and trying to build.
Well, that industry is like rocking.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, everywhere you go, there's cosplay conventions, there's Comic Cons.
I just was at Awesome Con meeting cosplayers that are local that I just met for the first time that I'm going to start collaborating with. Like, they're all over the place, and they love making stuff, and they make cool stuff.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's like the artistry. So it's talented. It's a whole other form of art.
Yeah, and that's another thing. Like going back to the beginning, like what we said in the beginning, like cosplay, cosplayers. That's another thing that I want to showcase on this podcast. Sure. It's a form of art. And it's one that I am passionate about and I'm involved in, and I really, really love what these guys do with it.
And the Polyprops product line is specifically really good those kinds of materials in general, and movie props in general, right?
Like
if you're an independent filmmaker and you're trying to do a set, or you're making your own alien or whack job, you know, whatever, this is what you need because it flexes.
Oh, yeah, it does. I mean, Quantumania, like Ant-Man Quantumania.
Yeah.
The Kang's army soldiers.
Right.
Their face is just hex flex black.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. That's what they use.
That's a great credit.
It's amazing.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so that's and then I have a master sculptor, this dude named Reeve in the UK that I collaborate on all kinds of stuff with. With the Predator stuff, we do these xenomorphs.
Now pretend I wasn't a dork and didn't know what that means.
A xenomorph?
Yeah, so, I know, but people at home what a xenomorph
is. It's the creature from the movie Alien.
Right.
It's a H.R. Geiger creation in his world of fascinating artwork.
You were always that.
My God. H.R. Geiger, his artwork is great, but the alien, the creature, is just a work of art.
Right.
And we do some versions of it.
Right. You've got them all over your house.
I do.
When the kids come over.
I have a tolerant wife that allows me to display whatever I want, but it's all artistic. I mean, like, all the art on our walls in our house is all local artists.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, we don't have, like, store-bought art. I don't like Target art and IKEA art and Walmart art. That's what I call it.
Sure. It's got to have character.
Like, live, laugh, love. Nope. Don't have it.
Right.
Don't have it. I have local artists' work everywhere, and I love it.
In the Davis home, it's a little bit different.
It's a museum. I'm turning the house slowly into a museum. But now I'm starting to bring stuff into this area to make this room a museum.
That's correct. Sanity Lounge, baby.
So, yeah, that's a little bit about me and what I got going on.
That's incredible. Okay, so moving on from a brief history of your life up to this point. The first film you remember seeing in the theater when you were younger.
So, the first film I remember seeing was Jaws 3 in 3D, which is
incredible.
I was going to say awful and incredible at the same time. Right. I mean, Dennis Quaid. I mean,
look, Lewis Gossett.
Definitely not
Jr.
his best. It's great, but not. But that I do remember seeing that. But the first movie I really, really remember seeing is Predator.
It's
at Security
incredible.
Square Mall, which is wild to think about that you asked me that, because that is really the movie I remember seeing. I remember seeing it sitting at Security Square Mall watching The Predator, and that is probably why I have such a love for The Predator.
Yeah,
and
it's,
I don't
psychologically,
know why. It's the greatest movie creature ever created.
I tend to agree with you.
It is the coolest fucking creature overall, like from top to bottom, like from his feet to the dreadlocks. Like, he is the total package when it comes to and I don't even know, I guess I'd call him a movie monster, but he's not really. He's an alien, but he's a creature, he's my favorite.
You've consistently said this, you know, since I've known you.
Yeah.
Like, it really stuck with you.
Yeah, I love
you know,
it.
In 1987, when a young Woe Davis sat down, he had no idea that he was shaping something for the rest of his life when that alien, you know, I mean, and even the way the mouth opens, it blows your face off.
No, it's cool. I mean, I'll say one thing that was cool is, like, I posted one of, I don't know if it was Darth Maul or just one of the traditional Predators that I painted.
Right.
I don't have one of those here, but the wolf up there is my favorite.
The wolf Predator.
The wolf Predator. He's from Requiem.
He's
the cleaner. Like, he's the one they call in to fix shit.
Winston Wolf of the Predator.
He is the Winston Wolf of
the
Predator.
Well, look, it's funny. I remember I said to you, I'm like, hey, the one thing broke off. And what did you say?
Alien burns. Right. He got So the xenomorph, of course, its blood is acid, so it splattered on his face and ate off part of his mandible.
Of course. But it was so awesome because I thought it broke off. You said, no, dude.
Just real quick. So I posted a picture of the traditional predator I painted on Instagram and got a like from Steve Wang.
Oh my gosh, you told me about that.
Who is the original painter of the original Predator.
Yeah,
And he worked for Stan Winston and Stan Winston Studios back in the day and is one of my idols.
Right, right. That's a huge indictment, dude.
It was so cool.
Yeah,
it was
that's
so
incredible.
Cool. I mean, he just liked it, right? But that's all I needed.
Yeah, but that's all you need. And especially, you know, if it's from the guy, behind the guy.
No, it was from the
guy.
It
matters,
right,
dude.
He was the painter.
Yeah, it's good stuff. That's incredible.
Stan Winston and James Cameron actually created the design.
That's amazing. Yeah. I mean, what James Cameron, man.
He said it would be cool if it had mandibles.
Is that right?
Like Stan Winston, I think I read the story, they were on a plane and Stan Winston was just drawing some like designs for the Predator and James Cameron was like, wouldn't it be cool if it had mandibles?
Wow.
And as you well know, who was the original Predator?
Jean-Claude Van Damme, baby.
Imagine.
I mean, can you believe
the world
that?
We would imagine how the world would be if Jean-Claude Van Damme was the Predator.
Oh my God, it would be incredible.
I mean, I love Jean-Claude, but I don't know if I would love the Predator as much as I do.
My thing is he that hulking? This guy that they had, Kevin?
No, so they had a suit. So the original Predator looked more like a bug. Like it had, he had a tall mask on top of his head.
Okay.
So NECA makes a line of Predator toys that I collect.
Of
They're
course.
Like the 9-inch Predators.
Right.
Their 100th figure. They have over 100 now. But this was years ago. Their 100th anniversary figure. The 100th figure they made. So some of them are very hard to get. Was an homage to that.
Wow.
So the biomask is what the head looked like of the original Predator that Jean-Claude was going to portray.
Dude.
It's pretty cool. I have that figure. It's called the Alpha Predator.
And what, I can't remember, like, so what, did he get fired? Because
I think, I would imagine, no, I think I think Stan Winston was just like, I have to redesign this thing.
I got
this
you.
Looks, it just doesn't look good. It's not going to be as good. And I'm so glad they did. I don't know if Stan Winston was even involved in the original design
of
the Predator.
Been
I don't know. I'd have to look into that.
Yeah, it's wild how these things work. Serendipity. Because he left 87 Predator to then hook up with Bloodsport, 88 Bloodsport, baby.
Yes.
So it all works out for everyone. Right,
Bolo Young, man. Bolo Young was
Chung Lee.
Chung Lee. Yes. And you're talking about Ogre. What was his name? What's his name in real life? Is that who you're talking about?
No, I'm talking about Chung Lee. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Right, Ogre was in. Right, right. Fred?
Oh, yeah. I can't remember his name.
What the heck was his name in the
movie? No, it was Fred Aloysius and
Nerds. Right, right. That was Ogre. Frederick Aloysius Palowatsky was the Ogre. Remember the one principal goes, Frederick Aloysius Palowatsky, the Ogre.
Donald Gibb. He has a... Yeah, right.
Yeah, but what's his name in Bloodsport?
Oh.
It's like... I mean, that's going to drive me crazy. Well, dude, I mean, Bloodsport was a wonderful stepping stone for Van Damme, so thank God he got
Ray Jackson.
Ray.
Yes.
That's it.
God.
Jackson.
Bloodsport, again, though, but...
Remember the guy goes, come on, Jackson, you look like a Jackson.
80s and 90s action movies. I've seen every Jean-Claude Van Damme movie there is.
Incredible, dude. You remember No Retreat, No Surrender?
Yeah, yeah.
They just had like a...
Double Impact.
Oh, man. Double. I just saw
And Bolo
that.
Young was a villain. He was in a lot of Van Damme movies.
Yep,
it was awesome.
Well, I just saw Double Impact like 3 months ago. I came home from a gig and it was on.
Does it hold up?
No, gosh, it's so bad. But, you know who's in it? Our boy Jeffrey Lewis.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Yes.
Like, that was the last of the finest.
You know what does hold up and I still like, even though it's still cheese, is Universal Soldier.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I haven't watched
Dolph Lundgren.
You were always a Lundgren guy.
Because they're more like robotic.
Right, it works.
There's not a whole, Van Damme doesn't have a whole lot of dialogue. I mean, he does, but he's more like, he's a soldier. He's
right.
And then Sanity Lounge is brought to you by Polyprops. Polyprops US specializes in the production and distribution of materials used in the creation of props and costumes, particularly in the cosplay and entertainment industries. For more information, visit www.poly-propsus.com. Use code HEXFLEX10 for 10% off your first order.
All right, so this this one you can, you know, answer at your own peril. But what was the first drug other than caffeine or over-the-counter Tylenol that you were called doing?
Oh, marijuana.
Is that before cigarettes? Before alcohol?
I would say cigarettes and alcohol.
Right.
Probably at the same time.
I got you. Now, do you, were you, I know the, I think I know the answer, but were you into cigarettes and alcohol because at that time you really enjoyed them, or was it to be quote unquote hip?
No, I don't think it was to be hip. I think back then, I mean, it wasn't like peer pressure. It was just what we were doing. Like,
right. Well, that was kind of the vibe I always had.
Kind of were there.
Well, look, again, I'm trying to paint a picture of you know.
We started very young, but it molded us into the men we are today.
Right,
and I have
no
regrets.
Right, right.
Although I have quit smoking. I mean, I revisited once in a while. I have a cigarette here and there, but I have that weird ability to be able to do that, which is an odd one.
It's unbelievable.
But I've kind of like over the last, I haven't had a cigarette in months now, like just because I've gotten to that point again in my life where I just don't want it. But
why
I have no problems with it. Like if somebody offered me, if I felt like having a cigarette, I would just have one. Like I'm not anti-cigarettes, and I'm not I mean, I guess I'd consider myself a non-smoker.
Right.
But, and I, even drinking, like I don't drink all the time, but when I do, sometimes I go hard.
But when I do, shit hits the fan.
I like the party.
Right, right. Yeah, but I was really curious if cigarettes were first or was alcohol first.
You know, to be honest, I mean, my honest answer is I don't really remember. I don't know.
Because you were always a hard smoker. Like when we first met, you were a Marlboro smoker. I mean,
Marlboro
I was.
Reds.
Yeah, I was a Campbell guy.
I was a Marlboro Red guy for a long time.
Yeah.
Then moved into the Camels.
Right.
Then the I went on a run of Winston Selects.
Right, I went on a run of Winston.
The Camel Turkish Golds, they were good ones back in the day.
Do you remember those tins, like Camel tins with flavors? It was like dark chocolate, orange. This is towards the end of
cigarettes?
My smoking career. Yeah, they started coming out with these tins, Camel did, and they were fucking phenomenal.
No.
Now, that being said, you know. Nowadays they're probably $20 for the specialty cigarette, or you know what I mean? It's
one reason I probably don't really. I mean, like I said, I can have a cigarette here and there, but I've gotten like into fitness these days.
Yeah,
I'm
trying
to keep, it's starting to work. Like see results. Like,
yeah,
there's
a
gym right by our house, but it's like group fitness, so it's not a gym because when I can't go to the gym by myself,
right?
And like work out on my own. Number one, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing,
right?
And number two, I'm lazy,
right?
So I take more breaks, but so this is like organized group fitness, but it is not CrossFit,
right?
It's just high interval training, but it's awesome. And the group of people that are there, like I'm a morning guy. I go at 6:10 every morning, like usually 5 to 6 days a week. And it's the same crew of people. And we've all gotten we've all been working out together almost a year now. And it's fun. Like,
yeah,
I love
you've
it.
Done
like,
it hardcore even after long
and my
ass
wife
nights.
Amanda does it too. Like, I convinced her to do it, and she now loves it. And we're starting to see results. I mean, like, I'm not necessarily. It's not like I'm losing weight, but I'm starting to develop muscle and lose body fat, which is the goal. Because I love to eat.
Right.
So I'm not really changing. I haven't changed my diet really. So I mean, I have. Like, I don't eat fast food, and I try to watch what I eat, but I still like. eat.
Yeah,
like
right.
I'll eat like a sleeve of golden Oreos. Like
right.
It's nothing.
Well, you want to work on that, but
but I'm not going to. I'll just work out harder. Yeah, so I can eat that sleeve.
We'll talk about it. You know, let's don't never say never. But
right.
Let's,
I know. Give up the other like the fast food. I don't really eat fast food, and it's not because I don't love it.
Right.
It's
right.
Because. It will ruin me.
He said, it's because I'll die.
Right. But no, I mean, the fitness thing is just so I can live a long life.
Right,
and torture
right.
my kids for the rest of theirs.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Well, you guys are doing
fun.
Great.
Like, yeah, it's great. It's fun. Like, I generally enjoy going, which, I mean, getting up at 5:30 every morning and going to work out like Amanda thinks I'm a psychopath, and then everybody that's there with me, I'm like, you think we're all crazy?
Right. And also, after...
we all love it.
Every time, I mean, I get up at 4:45 and I'd right. rather eat a pile of shit every time.
So imagine getting up at 4:45 and going to the gym and working out for an hour.
But I can picture, because when I go to the job, mm-hmm. sometimes I'm cutting trees
yeah,
and shit,
yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And
you're
all
working.
Of a sudden I'm sweating my ass
labor.
Off, and it's like, even though I'd rather do anything than do it, when it's over, I feel good,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I
yeah,
feel
yeah, yeah.
better.
That's why I like going in the morning, because
the morning,
I don't
right.
feel like going in the evening when I get done working. I think about it all day, and I dread it all
sure.
day. So
you
if I go
over.
In the morning, go get it over with, then I feel good all day. I can come home tired, I can get back to like doing some work in the garage, like sculpting, painting, just working on stuff.
Right,
just
right.
More product, just hanging out with my family, watching TV, like all that stuff. It's
right.
I just don't like going to the gym in the evening. I just don't feel as motivated.
Sure.
But I mean, some people do, some people don't.
It's your
it's,
system.
It's, fine, yeah.
it's like...
Like Amanda works out in the evening because she's not a morning person.
Right.
The older I get, the more I enjoy mornings.
Me too.
But I can still go all night.
Right.
If necessary.
Right.
I'm
well
a professional.
Aware of that. Right.
I'm a professional.
I know. I know. All right. Well, look, I mean, to me, I think that's pretty much it. I mean, I could ask you about your philosophy, but, you know... You know, it's up to you. I mean, you were kind of in my head, like, if you had to paint a picture of your philosophy, the philosophy of Roy Davis at this point in your life with children, your wife, you know, you're getting older, we're getting older, you know, what
so,
would you say?
It's interesting. I mean, I was raised Catholic. My mother's a devout Catholic, and I think, and my father has now like gotten really into it. I don't know. I mean, when I was younger, I mean, he wasn't as devoted as he is now.
Right.
And it's fine.
Yeah,
but,
it's good.
I mean,
it's good stuff.
they go all over the place, like the Grotto in Emmitsburg. They go out to mass out there, which is cool because one of my great uncles like painted the murals at that place. And
damn,
it's like a historical shrine.
You see, art runs in your family.
In Emmitsburg, so if you're ever out there, my uncle on my mother's side painted the murals out there. It's wild.
Wow.
But my mother. I think she has enough faith for me and my whole family. So I mean, at this point in my life, like I have questions. I really don't think about it as much
right.
as I used to. I mean, I went through all through confirmation. I was raised Catholic. I mean, I was raised to believe in heaven or hell and God and everything. And not to say that I don't, but I just don't really think about it anymore in that way. Like I'm more into like the greater universe. Like,
right.
I really am. Like just thinking about like just, I can't wrap my mind head around like how insignificant we kind of are. So, but it's fine to believe in something. And
sure.
like I said, I'm not saying I don't, but.
A religious person would tell you that that's why religion is important, to make you realize
yeah.
that even if you feel that from the emptiness of vast space, the religion comes
yeah.
into play so you don't feel so insignificant.
Yeah.
Now, that being said, you know me, baby. I'm you know, I don't necessarily, I don't agree with whatever, but
yeah.
I'm just telling you that's
no,
what they
and you've
say.
Gotten me into some cool books, and I've been reading a lot about, like, antiquity and Ulysses mm-hmm. and the time before Jesus.
Right.
The Greeks, the Romans, and the psychedelic aspect to all that, and
right.
the pilgrimages to yeah. Ulysses, where they're just using psychedelics to connect with their gods, and that's a wild, fascinating thing too, is just using psychedelics to connect with spirituality and whatever you believe. It's just a way to do it. There's something to that too.
Right.
There's something to that, and it's pretty fascinating.
Well, yeah, and along with that, as you know, as you've been reading, is drums.
Yeah, yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
That's
consistent in all of these stories.
Right, right.
But then my kids go to Catholic school. They go to St. Ursula, and they're very interested in the stories and learning. And I leave it to them to make their own choices and decisions. And I don't disparage them from anything.
Sure.
And I would never, because like I said, again, I don't not believe in things.
Yeah, right.
But at this point in my life, I just have more focus. I have faith. I mean, I believe in the power of prayer.
Sure.
I really do. And my mother has proved that time and time again.
Right. Well, don't look down low, but you might have a little faith, you know, but it's fine. But
right,
I'm saying,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like you're saying, you're kind of, you don't know.
I just like
you're
being these days.
Yeah,
I just to be.
Sure.
And I just like to explore all of it.
Yeah. Well, that's
because
a good
there's
way to
more,
be.
I just like to explore all of it.
I find the older I get, I'm fascinated learning. I wish I'd have given a shit when I was supposed to give a shit. You know what I'm saying? I mean,
we were having fun.
I know, but man.
It doesn't matter.
Imagine how much I'd know if I'd have just shut up and done it.
It's never too late to learn.
Well, that's good stuff. And yeah, I agree. I think it's important for the kids to make their own path. And I never, you know, it's important because faith, I've seen it, you know, work on people.
Yeah.
It's very, I envy that. Like my wife has very, very strong faith and her mother had very, very strong faith. And I saw it in action.
Yeah.
And like,
oh, I have.
It's so inspirational.
And I believe I am a firm believer in life after death.
Right. Well, whoa, Davis, then you've answered the question.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, good talk.
That was great.
Yeah.
All right. So that was a little bit about me. So now we're going to learn a little bit about Mr. Leppo over here. First question is just going to be a little softball.
All right.
because I don't know the answer to this question.
All right.
Do you remember what got you into drums and why?
Yeah. I was at Tiffany Wheel's basement. Shout out Tiffany Wheel, behind baseball. The producer of this show is Chris Wheel. Shout out Chrissy. Yeah, baby. His sister's Tiffany. And I used to get liquored up in his basement. And he had a copy of Song Remains the Same by Led Zeppelin. And she used to rock
Wonderful film.
And I saw John Henry Bonham. And I was, of course, you know, whacked. But it took my breath away, and I became obsessed with drums after that.
And you had never touched an instrument prior to this. I mean, maybe touched one.
Well, actually, my father got me a guitar when I was like in like third grade. Mm-hmm. It was like a shorty guitar.
Right,
like I was
right.
so young, it wasn't even a full size guitar.
Right.
And I think I took like three lessons, and he was, you know, I just wasn't into it. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to do it. I was an asshole. But the drums just possessed me.
Right.
You know, and that was the moment.
Yep.
John Henry Bonham.
That's awesome. So leading up to this drum, revelation.
Right.
What were your interests growing up? Did you play sports? Did you never dabbled in any other instrument? did you play sports?
Whoa, Davis. Okay, so first of all, my real love, what kept me alive growing up, I had great parents, don't get me wrong, but I just was socially strange and I wasn't into anything. And so film was my Graceland growing up. That being said, you may not know this, Kenny knows it, I think, but I was made to play sports from first grade.
Oh.
To eighth grade.
You don't mean built as in made in the sense of being, you were
no,
built to play sports.
No, no.
You mean forced.
No, forced. Yeah. Now, yeah. No, I wasn't the
by
bionic
Biggs,
man.
By Sterling?
Baby. Yeah. Now, not in an abusive way, right? Right. He was, his whole thing was.
This is wonderful.
His whole thing was, he thought, it was the 80s. Everybody played sports.
I played soccer
and
lacrosse.
All kids played sports. Yeah, and so he was like, well, you got to play sports. And I'm like, I don't want to. I just like movies. And he's like, yeah, you'll like them. Just play. Right. So for about 2 years, it was like that. Then I started being like, I'm not going to play this year. And he's like, listen, you're going to play until you're in eighth grade, right, or to the end of eighth grade.
Yeah.
Once you're out of eighth grade, you'll be at the level where if you really just don't like any of them, I'll never bring it up again.
What grade did he throw that at you at?
Well, it's second grade. So I'm going, well, fuck, that's 7 years or some shit. It's it's like, and so I had to play soccer, basketball, and baseball every year from first to eighth grade.
This is amazing. Soccer, and baseball.
It's where I met
basketball.
It's where I met Bobby Krebs, right, and like Pole,
yeah,
and like Josh Inslee. I think Josh played baseball with me. And,
yeah.
But it was
Gamber Rec?
No.
Or Deer Park?
No. I was always in Westminster.
Westminster Rec.
Westminster, okay. Rec.
I played Gamber.
Yeah.
Gamber Rec.
Yeah, I don't.
I may
think
have played you in soccer.
I played Sandy Mount basketball.
Interesting. It's so.
I went to Mount Saint. Listen, I went to Johnny Dawkins basketball camp.
That's amazing.
And listen,
it's an incredible story. Dude.
Listen, not to be too crazy, but at Johnny Dawkins, because keep in mind, I am me. Like, I have been this my whole life, and in the 80s, I was outlandish. Like, people didn't know what to make of me because I was young. I wasn't into sports, but I could.
Were you in shape at least?
No, whoa. No, sir, not at all. But what I could do is I could recall movies.
Sure.
And so I'd go to these basketball camps and have the time of my life making everybody laugh.
Right.
And when I went,
you were always good at that.
When I went to the Johnny Dawkins basketball camp at Western Maryland College. Mm-hmm. The first day we were staying in Albert Norman Hall was the name of the thing. And there was like a ghost sighting that night.
Ooh, yeah.
And
makes sense.
And the next morning I went down to like the library, and there's like history there. Like, there's some sort of weird history. So the whole week it was spent not thinking about basketball at all, like ghost hunting and Albert. And I had the greatest week of my life, but it had nothing to do with the sports. It's because I was chasing ghosts, right, and stories. You know what I mean? Right. But yeah, that's the history of me with sports. I mean, so that's why drums, I think in retrospect, I think that is why I was so eager to latch on, because it looked physical, and it looked like, something that if I did and could hook, Dad would be like, proud. Not, he was always proud of me. He didn't, he was cool as shit.
Did you excel in any of these sports? any of them?
Absolutely not. Now look, if Donna was here,
right,
she'd go, BB, you were great at baseball, fact is, no, and that's fine,
But you gave it. You
but
gave
let me
it
tell
a
you something.
Try.
There's a great story. Dad, God love him, but there's a great story. When I was playing in the Westminster League, the Westminster Wall was full of people watching the game, and I never get a hit. Ever. Because at this point, I didn't have glasses. I didn't know I needed them. I'm blind as a bat. Can't see shit. So I'm not saying that's why I couldn't hit, but it might have been one of the reasons why I couldn't hit for shit. But this day, I caught one. And I hook it. I think it was a double. I'm on the second base. I think Robbie Krebs might have came up next. And he was always great at baseball. Mm-hmm. Slams it out. I'm at the second base. I start rounding third. Come home. And the whole place is rocking, and I start going into like movie mode in my head, because that's just the kind of kid I was. And I'm starting to like wave to people up there and stuff like that. And this and that, everybody starts laughing. So the whole place is going and I'm like, holy shit. Like, you know, they're rocking and rolling. And I bop right past the plate. I didn't touch the plate. I walked right past the plate into the dugout. So all of a sudden, everybody in the dugout's going, get back. What the fuck are you doing? My dad's yelling at me and all this shit. And I see the guy with the ball pick up the ball and he's going to throw the catcher. I haul ass back and about 3 feet before the plate, belly flop onto the plate.
Safe.
Safe, standing ovation. My dad's like, holy shit. Like, you know,
saved,
but it was
your
incredible.
Ass, dude.
Yeah, it was incredible.
That's an amazing,
but that's
amazing
the kind
story.
Of sports story that I have. You know what I mean?
Well, that was a home run. I had no idea. I don't know if I knew that. I guess I put it out of my mind.
I think I put
so
it out of my
mind. Outlandish.
Yeah, I mean, I never like shied away from it. We always laughed about it, Dad and I, but I don't know. You know, we were always talking about other shit. It just never occurred to me. You know, I don't know.
I mean, but you excelled at, I mean, you definitely excelled at the drumming. So talk about a little bit about, I mean, so that's what got you into it.
Right, right.
So talk about, like, I mean, you sat down and you started playing?
Yeah, I mean, my grandmother, my cousin Jason lived with my grandmother and he had a band, Jade, back then, and they were badass. And the drummer of that band used to leave his drum set in Mom's basement. Mm-hmm. And so once I saw the Bonham video, I'm like, man, I got to get to Mom's because I want to know if I can touch the drum set. And if so, I don't know. Like, I just felt, you know, Mickey Hart said he could feel the call of the drum. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, you know, like, but there was something to that where I was like, I was obsessed with getting to Mom's to see if the drum set was still there just to see. And I ended up staying down there all day. Mm-hmm. And I could just make it work a little bit. Like, I could make it work more than, like, in other words, Jason walked past and was like, hey, you know, like, you're drumming, you know? And I'm like, I know. And he's like, have you ever, you know, like, it was kind of like, I just could make it work a little bit. I wasn't slamming or ripping up chops and, you know, soloing, but I could do beats. And it just encouraged me to go down that rabbit hole for a minute. And I tried to go down that rabbit hole while we were in high school reasonably, but I got hooked on all the other things, the alcohol and the drugs and everything like that. And then it just became this thing in the periphery where if there was a drum set, I'd sit down and be like, hey, I'll slam.
Yeah.
And I, you know.
Right. No, I remember all that. Yeah.
And then.
But you were good.
Well, that was the thing is that because
I'm even thinking about that now, like as inexperienced as you were, like for me to think back about it, like, and how you are now, like maybe you weren't that great back then, and not in a bad way, but because we were like generally hammered.
Well, yeah, and I wasn't
when you sit down, but I remember it always being like, damn, like you're a drummer.
Well, it was weird. Yeah, like I could make it work to the point where many people were like, Leppo's a drummer.
I didn't
necessarily say that. Everybody else was Leppo's a drummer, watch, you know. And I'd be like,
what I remember is your first live performance at Burger King.
Dude, I was listen.
With Albin on the drums, the drafting Votech teacher was the drummer.
Listen, no. He sat in for a drum. It was me, Rob Steiner on vocals, Chris Shump, who is now known as Christopher James. We ought to get him in here.
Incredible blues player. Yeah.
Incredible player. And was back then.
Yeah.
Like he was rocking Frusciante before anyone gave a shit about
Frusciante.
Steiner. And Mariaca. Greg Mariaca. That was the band.
I was on the roof across from the Burger King.
Like, wait up.
There were people everywhere.
And Alfred.
Yeah, that's what I thought John Alfred was the bass player. Yeah, I thought he was there.
That
place was packed.
Yeah, listen, it was the very first show I ever did. We played like six songs and that guy, the teacher, was there
and Mike Albin sat in and played.
They played like maybe a Zeppelin song or something like that. But it was the weirdest thing I've ever. Yeah. Listen, I'm with my kids.
I mean,
now.
It was a gig.
Yeah. Look, I'm with my kids now and I'm going, you know what's weird? And they're like, what? I'm like, I played a concert right there in that parking lot in like 93.
Dude, it was awesome. Like, it was what? John Lieberman. He was our class president. At our high school sports games, when you went to the concession stand, the food was Burger King.
Right.
It was amazing.
Because of Lieberman.
Yes.
Right, right. The Lieberman family.
Yeah.
Went on to do stuff with Stern, yeah. Right?
Stern, he did America's Most Wanted. He hosted right. that for a while.
Holy shit.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, what a wild thought. I haven't thought about that in a long time. That year was, we did
yeah.
Come As You Are.
Yep.
Like, it was that
God,
year.
I remember. It was I remember
Nirvana,
that
Pearl
vividly
Jam,
now.
Chili Peppers. It was yeah. It was Blood Sugar, Nevermind.
God, there were a lot of people yeah, there, like, too. It was cool.
It was fun.
That was also the hangout spot. Like, yeah. I mean, that was like the Friday night spot.
Yep. I had my Pearl double bass red export set up in yep. the parking lot of Burger King.
Yes, you did.
And we had no like permits. Like, I don't know who the fuck. Like, I didn't know if we asked. Like, was it a sanctioned event?
I don't remember the specifics.
Yeah, I mean, what a weird thing.
So let's. So that was your first gig, I guess. That's your first gig that I remember, and I guess you remember. So yeah. Let's segue into what you're doing now with your drums.
Right.
So you're in a band.
Right. Right. So
a wonderful, fantastic. 80s, 90s, and today's hits cover band.
I appreciate that. We've worked very hard, man. And the band's called Making Waves, and we've been around for 10 years. And
how did you meet these guys? I guess I'll start with that, because
okay.
I'd love to know how you came to be with this band.
It's everything goes back to paying attention to the rhythms of the universe.
Yeah.
You know, we'll get into it. But mm-hmm. before this, when I came back from Florida, I got back into drums heavily in 2000 after reading Mickey Hart's Drumming at the Edge of Magic. I suggest everybody read it. It's a fascinating read. Drumming at the Edge of Magic. And it puts a whole new light on drumming in general and how to think about drums and what they can do for your health and all this kind of stuff. It sounds ridiculous, but if you start looking into it, there's a lot of history there. Anyway, I got into a Grateful Dead cover band in Florida for a few years and started playing a lot and mm-hmm. really deep diving into like tribal drumming and all kinds of weird drumming. Left there, came back here and started a band with my cousin. Well, actually I was in a band with Rob Bauhoff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I remember that.
Yeah. And so for a minute, me and Ornstein and Bauhoff
yes.
were playing yep. around. We never really went
yeah,
anywhere.
I remember.
We were just kind of
like
jamming.
I came up there once or twice.
Yeah. It was cool. I mean, you know, they're
yeah.
great players,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
but,
yeah.
but I think Adam had a kid or, you
right.
know, like they were, life
yep.
happens.
Yeah.
So then I started a band with my cousin, and we were called Rube Goldberg Solution.
I remember that band.
Right. And RGS. And
this is Jason.
Right. Jason, my cousin, he's 10 years older than me. Incredible player. We're going to have him on. He's got a lot of really great stories.
Yeah. And pause right here. Jason, I'll shout out Jason right now. He is the guitar player on our theme song.
Ah, oh, yes.
You are the drummer right, on our theme song.
Right.
And Ron is the bass player. Right. We'll get into Ron
right.
on a later episode.
Right. Yeah, well, Jason, Jason, me, and a guy named Ian Dix started a band, Rube yeah. Goldberg Solution.
Okay.
And Ian and I and Jason became really great friends. Ian is a blues, he's a music lover. He's one of the most passionate guys I've ever met in my life. He's older. He's got guru qualities. He's just an incredible guy, incredible taste in music, and he really pushed us to become a really good band mm-hmm. as RGS. We brought on a keyboard player, Larry, and we were doing Steely Dan. We were doing Kid Charlemagne. Like, we were doing really good stuff.
Were you doing gigs or just
yeah,
practicing?
Yeah. We played Pikesville Theater and all this stuff like that. Right when we started to play, you know what else we played? That there's an alley in Baltimore with art, like, painted all over, graffiti all over it. It's like Graffiti
Chapel
Alley.
Street? I don't know. Is there an American flag at the end of it?
I don't know, but there's a warehouse that opens up, and it's like there was people on trapezes and shit, and we played a gig there. It was a really weird gig. It was
not
great.
Sure what that is. How long ago was this?
08.
Okay.
Or no, maybe 2010.
Okay.
But anyway, so that we did for a minute. Larry came in and was the keyboard player. Eventually, Ian got a gig. He's like a corporate guy, He'll kill me for saying that. He's not. He's a fighter. But, you know, he's got jobs, and he had to go. He had to move to Colorado.
Right.
And so the band broke up. And it wasn't terrible because it is what it is. And so I go for about a year of just me continuing to obsess over drums and personally practicing and reading and shit like that. Year after that, Larry calls me out of nowhere, and he's like, hey, I'm in an 80s, me and my old high school buddy and his wife are going to start an 80s cover band, and they need a drummer. Will you do it? And I was like, okay. Now my kids are like, Dad, you're going to be in an 80s band? I said, don't be, you know, give me, I just want to play, you know, I'm just trying to play.
Right.
You know? And so, I joined him, and we played in Spargo's, in the basement of Spargo's, and it was initially Larry, me, Steven, Gina, and Matt Sedlak on guitar. And over the years, Matt left, Larry left, and Jim Cabral on keyboards and Brent Bauer on guitar joined. And for the last, like, Jim's been in it for a long time now. Brent's been in it for about 6 years now, and we've spent the last 10 years just slowly building into a pretty nice following. I mean,
oh, yeah.
You know, we get good gigs now. I mean,
and you're good. Like, you've evolved. I mean, you guys are playing at a next level now. I mean,
yeah.
The mayor of Ocean City, like, loves you guys. Like, he wants you to be at every event they do now. You're doing Springfest, right?
And Summerfest.
Yeah,
Sunday,
it's awesome.
In the park.
No, you guys are great. Yeah. You move, and it's not just 80s anymore.
No,
you
do right. Every, well, you, that's
you're all
thing.
Over the place.
We evolve. And the other thing is that, and this is the secret to the sauce, and this is, so Larry and Matt Sedlak era, okay, we're still in. Making Waves is there. We're doing all right. And one night, there is this kid who comes in.
I was going to ask you about the kid.
Okay. There's this kid who comes in, and he's got 30 people with him.
Yep.
And they're probably like ages 16 to 70. And right. I'm not kidding.
Right, right.
And I'm not kidding about 30.
Mm-hmm.
30.
Right.
He comes in the bar. We're playing. And this kid is rocking. And everybody there is feeding all of his energy, and he's slamming the dance floor. And we're like, man, this fucking kid is great.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the night, we're like, what's your name? He's like, my name's Christian. How old are you? 16. All right. Now, side note, 16, you and me, we're not in a bar watching an 80s cover band with 70-year-olds dancing our ass off sober. That's what this kid was
right.
doing.
Sure.
You know, so he was just a different kind of kid. And I'm like, yeah. wow. So next thing I know, ain't that wow? You know, that's what my wife's like, Brian, yeah, he's good. He's a good kid.
He was normal.
Anyway. But that being said, he starts coming to all of our gigs.
Right.
One night and bringing a shitload of people every time. One night he asks us if he can sing What I Like About You. He's like, can I come up and like sing with you guys What right. I Like About You? And we're like, yeah, all right. I mean, can you? And he's like, yeah, I think so.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets up and he's like fucking.
He does his thing.
Oh my God. He's like Prince and,
yeah.
you know, I mean, he's running around like a lunatic. The whole place blows the roof off the mm-hmm. place. Long story short, he was 16 then. We invited him to start doing 6 songs, 7 songs, 8 songs, 9 songs. Set. Eventually, he joined the band, and he's been in the band for the last 8 years or seven years.
I will add, Christian brings the fucking energy.
The heat, baby.
It's all of you guys.
Yeah.
But he brings the energy. Hey, but that's his job.
Don't
in this
sleep
band.
On Brent Bauer either. Brent Bauer over to the right on
yeah.
guitar.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
remember?
Yeah.
He's jumping around like a damn
lunatic. No, it's
lunatic.
All, like I said, I'm yeah. now all of you guys. Like, I love,
yeah.
love your band. But Christian,
it's insane.
I mean, he's a front man.
100%.
Like, he's a perfect frontman.
Well, that's what Steven and I always say.
That's a talent, dude.
It is. And Steven and I always say, it's like, look, you
know. Like, that dude has no fear.
Players are players, but a good frontman is a different thing.
Oh, yeah. It makes a band.
100%. And that kid is a good frontman.
Yeah. I mean, imagine if he sang just sang the songs.
Right.
Not without movement.
It doesn't work. He can't do it. No. He can't do it. You know, he's got a wireless now.
I love him, dude. He's amazing.
Yeah, and he's got it down now. Like, he's a real good performer.
You guys have all gotten better. Just the sound, everything about you, which is natural. I mean, you practice,
right?
Makes improvement, you not know perfection, but it works. Like, you guys have, like, from the first time I saw you to now, like, every time I see you, I'm just like, man, dude, you guys are so tight. Like, it's just so good.
Right.
It's you guys are just gelling now.
Right.
It's
We've awesome. Really worked hard.
And you've been playing together a long time.
I swear to God, I think it all came, like, I swear the next level we just hit happened at Summerfest on the stage last year. That day, we hit a different gear where we were like, this is the best gig we've ever done, period. Mm-hmm. And we left that day, and then we got home in the mayor of Ocean City, and, you know, like, it felt like a...
Did you just unconsciously call it Ocean Shitty?
Yeah, I almost spit. the mayor of Ocean City. But you could feel a paradigm shift.
Right, yeah.
Like, it was officially a different level.
They love you at Fager's, too. Like, yeah. Every time I'm at Fager's and you guys are there, you guys... I mean, you were there, you played there during Ocean's Calling back in October, and that place was packed.
Yeah.
Packed. Yep, and yep. there was the first ever festival going on down the street.
I know. We got 5 gigs at Fager's.
Dude,
I love
seeing you guys there. Mm-hmm. Love it.
But that's really the progression in long form
that's
answer
awesome.
Of the band. And a shout out to my peeps and Make Waves. And Gina, Miss Gina, has evolved. You know, she married Steven. Steven's mm-hmm. a bass player.
Yeah,
and Steven,
yeah.
It was him and Larry. It was their idea for the band. But Steven and Gina, you know, got married. Mm-hmm. And Gina is not a lifelong performer. She's just, you know, she's passionate about church singing. Mm-hmm. And she's passionate about singing in general. She meets Steven and she's like, sure, I'll back you up or whatever.
It's awesome.
Steven's like, hey, pick up a tambourine here. And then he's like, hey, grab the, let's see if you can do this. And then, and over time, yeah, it's like she's become clutch with the harmonies. She rocks Walking on Sunshine.
Yeah.
I mean, she's really evolved into an incredible player, you know. And
Jim's daughter doing Alanis.
Because
Alanis was at Ocean's Calling. So she got up there for a few songs at Fager's and
right.
she blew the roof off of that place, dude.
Well, that's the blessing of the band is that with Gina, this year particularly coming up, Gina has a face painting gig on the side that she does. And it pays pretty good. And
right.
so sometimes they can't turn down that. So Maddie Cabral, Jim's mm-hmm. daughter... Mm-hmm. is there waiting. So when Miss Gina can't do it, Maddie's going to step in and she does her own thing, which is, you know, a different vibe of rocker.
Yep.
I mean, you know, that Alanis Morissette and the Joan Jett, you know, she does the Bad Reputation.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
That was awesome. She was natural talent.
Yeah, she's awesome. And Jim Cabral's a studio player. He's
great too, man.
He was on his way down to Nashville. Like, he's a lifer. I mean, he's a great player. And he's like, not to blow his head up because he's, you know, he knows it. But his vocal, he's like a vocal guru.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, he's the guy that if you're sitting there singing, he's like, oh, somebody's flat. Who is it? How much? And he can find the key and... You know, in a real nice, subtle way. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's not an asshole, but
no.
He's that guy. Like, he's really good. And so I just am happy to death with, we're like, you know, the fish of the 80s cover bands.
That's a bold statement.
I know.
I like it. I am going to ask you a question now that you asked me. And what is the first movie that you remember seeing in the theater?
Raiders of the Lost Ark. And it was so incredibly, profoundly impactful
mm-hmm.
that I did. That started me doing bad in school. Like, I went to school the next day and could think of nothing else but what I had seen, because I was young. I was 82.
Mm-hmm.
And I was young, you know? And so I got it a little bit. Dad was with me, and but I remember the faces melting and biblical shit.
Right.
And I'm just learning about Sunday school and all this kind of, you know, I was so entranced by that movie. You know, it was Raiders. That's
awesome. Me and Josh went to the Hippodrome and saw the original film, like, I guess probably now. It was probably like 10 years ago.
Like the print, the original print?
Yeah, the original print. They played it at the Hippodrome, and we went and saw it. It was great.
I'll bet.
It was like the first time.
It still holds up. I mean, it's an incredible movie.
Oh, yes. Incredible movie. It holds up. And although I love Raiders, but Temple of Doom has always been my favorite.
I know.
Have that program too.
I know. Well, you look like the guy. Yeah. You look like one of the dudes. You know that guy, the dude, the heavy dude,
the henchman leader.
Yeah. That's the dude from the plane fight in the first one.
I recently found that out.
Yeah, I never knew that. Yeah, no. I guess I recently found that.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe like, we saw him the same thing.
Yeah, like real recently. I did not know that was the same
person.
I
never knew that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it makes perfect sense.
The plane fight. How did that make you feel the first time you saw that?
Oh, my God. That's what I...
6-7 years old.
I remember leaning over to my dad going, what just happened? He's like,
why did the blood spray? Right.
I said, was that blood? He's like, yeah, we'll talk later. Yeah, it was Raiders.
All right, so, like, can you, being the film fan that you are, give me a little rundown of maybe your top five.
Go to hell.
I'm not going to ask you your favorite movie. That's a hard question.
This is a floating top five, all right, because I can't do it. They're all my babies, you know. I have different times of the year where I'm entranced by.
I can agree. I can respect that.
I would say
agree with that too.
Right now, and I'm gonna go Muppet Movie.
Muppet movies in my top five.
Historically,
I am not lying about that.
Yeah, it's the feel good movie of the century or last century.
Anyway. We just went and saw it recently too.
Yeah, it's
took the kids.
You can't,
you, me, Josh.
Right. It's
that was
like
awesome.
It's the feel good movie of the century. I mean, it really is. You can't deny that it's an artistic masterpiece and it's a musical
masterpiece. And it has the greatest band of all time.
Dr. Teeth and the
Electric Mayhem.
Right. And the cameos. I mean, you know, you just can't beat it. So Muppet Movie.
God, isn't the first cameo, isn't Dom DeLuise the one in the boat when Kermit's singing?
Hollywood. Yeah.
Dom DeLuise.
Right. It's an A, yo. Okay.
Oh, my God. It does have the best cameos.
He goes, Ernie the agent, meet Ernie the alligator or whatever. And the alligator comes up and says, yes. Yeah.
I love it.
So Muppet Movie, I'm going to go Godfather 1-2, The Godfather Epic. That counts as one. And actually, the internet will be like, hey, do you know, I am aware, The Godfather Epic. This is one of those B. Lepo things. Do you know what I'm about to say?
I don't think so.
Okay, good. What, you know how like when we were younger, I would be like, there's hidden scenes in The Outsiders that nobody's seen, and no one would believe me.
Mm-hmm.
And then like years would go by, and then Outsiders would get a director's cut release, and the scenes that I've been talking about for years are confirmed to be
right?
truth.
So how did you know these?
Well, because over the years, I constantly was watching movies broadcasted or whatever. And sometimes back on broadcasting days, they would put in the edited clips because I guess for running time or whatever.
Right.
But I didn't know. Nobody knew. And like it never occurred to you back then. There was no internet. There was no anything. You're just watching a movie. So I would watch The Outsiders and they're having a courtroom scene. And I'd be like, wow, this is a great movie. And then I'd go to the video store and rent Outsiders, and there's no courtroom scene.
Right.
And I'm going, but then I'd meet fuckers like you guys, and you guys would be like, you're on drugs. Those scenes aren't real. Right. And I'm like, I'm telling you, you know, they're fucking real.
Yeah.
The Godfather Epic is one of these ones where when I was a kid, I tune into The Godfather and the next thing I know, it's playing in order.
Mm-hmm.
Godfather 2, the Vito Corleone scenes are when it opens, it's in old Italy.
Chronological order.
It's in chronological order with extra scenes that aren't in any of the other two.
That's interesting.
And it's called The Godfather Epic and it's, I think it's 8 hours. It's like longer, it's real long, but it's fascinating.
Sure. I love those movies.
So that, so Muppet, Godfathers, Carita Brigante, Carlito's Way.
That's a good one. Excellent. Holds
the
up.
The wisdom in that movie is...
You're a Pacino fan, I think.
Yeah, I really am.
I am. I mean...
I really am. I got to tell you, Injustice for All might be in my... Heat. I mean, that's in my floating top five. It's awfully 80s, but like the soundtrack
Serpico.
Is problem. Oh, dude. And Justice for All, though, is a different level of it was just the perfect time.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm going Muppets, Godfather, Carlito Brigante, Pulp Fiction.
Oh,
because there's nothing like
it's
it
just gotta be
before
there.
Or after. And then. Oh. 2001, A Space Odyssey.
That's interesting. That's, I mean, that's a good one, but I mean, I love that movie for what it is, but
when's the last time you watched
it? It's been a while.
Okay.
And I would say it was probably with you. I mean, it could be 20
years
ago.
It was in Florida.
Yeah,
I bet,
probably.
When we watched it in Florida. Now, we've seen
it before.
It.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, I do not like that film.
Right.
It's fascinating and phenomenal and very creepy at the same way.
2001 A Space Odyssey, in my opinion, is the greatest sci-fi movie of all time, bar none. Bar none. And if you visit it nowadays...
I would say Aliens.
Well, listen, though, this is what I'm saying, though. Like, Aliens is
actually,
fun.
The
you know?
Thing, would The Thing be considered a sci-fi or horror? Or horror sci-fi?
Yeah, sci-fi
the
horror.
Thing,
that's a tough one. The Thing was incredible.
The Thing's in my top five.
You know, that's a remake. That was an old black and white movie.
It's been made three times,
right,
technically.
Right, right. But wait, what's the movie that we were...
2001.
2001, A Space Odyssey. Mm. Philosophically, it's the heaviest shit you'll ever consume in your life.
Yeah,
and
I would definitely
have
to
now,
revisit
after what you've just consumed, like in book form and shit like that. It'll blow your face off.
Yeah, it probably would. And I mean, like, I won't even lie here. Like, I could sit here right now and honestly tell you, I don't know what the fuck that movie's about.
Right, right.
Like, right now, like, if you were like, what's it about? I mean, like, well, he's in space and how, like, the ship kind of takes.
Right.
I don't, but then I'm like thinking, I'm like, wait a minute, what is the movie about?
Do you, I mean, so do you, you don't recall like the how part is what everyone associates with 2001 A Space Odyssey. And it is arguably the funnest part.
Right. But it's not the movie.
But to me, the depth of the movie is why it's incredible.
I'm going to revisit
it. It opens. Do you recall that it opens?
Oh, it opens with, it opens with the apes realizing.
Pre-evolution man, right. It's like.
Realizing they can crush shit with bone.
The invention of tool and weapon. And after
and
that.
And beats.
Right. And beats. That's right, baby.
And rhythm.
Oh, God. I know. He's even going like this, you know.
Yes.
I know. Well, look, but that's why it's got to be, to me, it's the greatest sci-fi movie ever made.
And it leads into my favorite Fish song.
Oh.
Hands down.
Also Sprock Zarathustra.
Yes.
Yes. Incredible.
That and Punch you in the Eye.
Incredible.
I'd say they're my two favorite
Fish
songs.
I love Punch You.
God,
a good Punch You in the Eye. Incredible. Good.
And you know another song, just a little segue, is... what is it's Martian Monster. Yeah. And I've only heard it once.
Love it.
At Merriweather, at arguably one of the worst shows we've ever seen, but they ended with it, which saved the whole night.
Right, right. Incredible.
But I've only
Martian
heard it once. Everywhere I go, I want to hear it, and I feel like they're never going to play it again.
Yeah, the end of that show was strong.
The encore.
What else was it? It was Martian
just,
Monster and something else.
I don't
but
know.
But they kind of made up good stuff. You know,
but
it
opened with Blaze On, so you're like, all right, it's going to be one of those days.
I love it.
And then you're like...
Yeah, you know.
And coincidentally, Mando was at both of that show and
that's
the one before.
That's the worst part.
Took my wife to both two Fish shows. Right. She's not a Fish fan. She's into beats and rhythm. And she was a little bit of a raver back in the day. Maybe.
Right.
But we won't go there. But the two Fish shows that she has been to have been two of the worst ones that right. I have been to.
Right. It couldn't go any other way, did it? You know?
Yeah. So
okay. That's my top five.
That's a good top five. And we could probably just sit here for the rest of the night and change that list.
Over I know, and over for and fuck's over sake.
We keep shouting out movies, so we won't do that.
I know.
How about, let's go musically. Like, give me who are your biggest influences? Like, albums, artists? Like,
Led
what
Zeppelin
are you into?
Was the, as you know, the, yep. I mean, I was an obnoxious that guy. Like, it, you know, through mm-hmm. high school, Zeppelin just entranced me. Yeah. And every album was incredible. You know, like, you just, there was no argument, you know. They were the greatest of all times. And I still believe that, but you know, you get older, you evolve, your tastes evolve. In 94, whatever it was, we started, we were always into the Dead. Yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, that's the other thing. It's like, I started veering into the Dead and, that whole run, Almonds and, you know, that yeah. kind of vibe, War and, you know, every kind of great, cool 70s, mm-hmm. especially psychedelic vibe I could explore. Pink Floyd, man. Oh, my God. Oh,
94 RFK, man. That was
one of the great.
That was one of the greatest experiences of my life.
One of the greatest nights of our lives.
We were there together.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, just for the record, children, cover your ears. The tally was a half keg of beer, about 10 hits of white blotter acid, an ounce of grass, and we spent about $300 on nitrous. And we were in the heart of D.C., yeah, baby.
At RFK, and, the Pulse Tour.
And yeah. Remember, right when we got out of the big vehicle mm-hmm. we were in, well, it was a Suburban.
Kenny's pickup with the cap.
Okay, I was like, it was a huge vehicle. I just remember right when we got out and the acid kicked in, some cat came up with prism glasses.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, he gave them to us.
And that was when it turned into an interesting night, baby.
Yeah.
But that is up to, and then Fish took over my life.
We've been seeing Fish yeah. together since 1994.
But right now, in my head, if someone were to ask me what my favorite of all time musically, my top three of all time and has been for 20 years, so I feel confident, is yep. Frank Zappa, anything Zappa, Steely Dan, and Fish.
Yeah.
They're consistently that, whatever that is, quirky, weirdo, a little bit odd, but very tasty. And if you're a player, you can't deny how
yeah,
incredible.
Yeah, no, that's
it
a good list. I am a fan. I love Steely Dan. But I haven't gone down their catalog like you have. Same with Zappa. Like, it's too much. Like,
Zappa's
I'd have to, like,
much.
Devote life to it.
Steely's an interesting thing.
I mean, not too much in a bad way. Like, it's just, there's so much.
I haven't listened
there's
to
so
all
much
of
variety. There's right. so much. What did you, how many albums does he have?
He has 79 studio albums.
That's insane.
And I got to tell you, it's probably up from there.
Yeah,
you
that's,
know? Like,
that's absolutely insane.
And some of them are, like, Zappa is the guy, like, Lumpy Gravy, like, one whole side of Lumpy Gravy is just weird ass noises,
right?
You know, so it's like, I'm talking like 38 minutes right. of like you know, and so it's like you've really got to wade through certain things if you got to seek what's good, and it's out there,
right?
The one thing I want to say about Steely is that, and this goes for Fish kind of, but really with Steely, every single Steely Dan album I would get, and I'll put on, and I'll listen to it open to close. And the first time I listen to it, I'm like, I don't like this. I don't like this. Like, it's, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And then I leave and I'm like, that sucks. Like, I love Steely. Why don't I like this? Like, fuck. And then I put it on again and I'm like, hey, I love that melody. Man, that's a great fucking melody. I love that. You know, and then after that second listen, I can't get those melodies out of my head. And then I go back and put it on, and it's the greatest music I've ever heard in my life. And I think that all of this music is not your average music. So when you first, your ear first hears it, it's a little bit like just strange. the second listen, your ear is like, oh, and gets the patterns. And the third, it engulfs you. Mm-hmm. And then you're hearing these melodies, sections of Steely.
Right.
You know, and you're like, what is that song? And then you find it and you're like, holy shit, that's the Fez on the Royal Scam. And then, you know, you put on the Royal Scam and, you know, if you're going to go down a Steely rabbit hole, do them all. But yeah. Know this.
I do love the Fez.
The Royal Scam is the best. Asia is the best, like, you know, like Rolling Stone will tell mm-hmm. you Asia. Everybody's like Asia. And sonically, I think, if you're an audio nerd, I think sonically you could make the argument that Asia is the best. But playing wise and cut for cut, the Royal Scam is the best,
nice,
in my opinion.
So that's a little bit about you.
Nice.
I like it.
Yeah, well, good stuff. I mean, and, you know, so we got a lot of good stuff coming up. I'm looking forward to it. Tell your friends.
There's one more question I guess we can ask. One more question I'm going to ask you is, what do you want out of this podcast that we're doing?
Right. Well, this has been a passion project of mine for the last 3 years. And it's taken a lot of turns, twists, different iterations. And I wanted to put a good light on the city of Baltimore, put a good light on the city's artists in general. But I also want to shoehorn in a passion for drums and a story about drumming that I want everybody to realize, because I do think if people paid attention to drums and rhythm, it will help the world heal. It sounds ridiculous, and I feel ridiculous saying it, but that is kind of the impetus for this show, mm-hmm. is I would like everyone to start paying attention to rhythm more and using it for their calming and their well-being. And I think it will help. It sounds dumb, but I do want
to
help.
It doesn't sound dumb at all, and I agree. And I'm glad you kind of like brought me on now, because I'm looking forward to going down that rabbit hole with you.
Well, because that's the thing, is that I called you, you know, Chris came in a year ago or so, and then he was like, yo, get Davis. And I'm like, I would love to get Davis, because I just didn't, you know. And so I call you, and you were totally game, and I thought you would be
without hesitation,
because of your, we have a lot of history.
Yeah. And, you know. No, it's perfect. And this is, I mean, I'll be right up front. Like, this is not my, like, comfort zone. It's like doing what we're doing. And I don't mind saying that, but it's fun. But ultimately, what I want to do is give, like I said in the beginning, is just showcase the Baltimore music scene, Baltimore artists, Baltimore filmmakers, Baltimore as a whole, because me and Amanda love the culture. We love the city. We love seeing music. We love seeing local music. We love supporting local music. And I just want them to have a place to showcase their talents and then just sit down and have a conversation. It's like, this is our love letter to Baltimore, local music, Baltimore City.
And I do feel like Baltimore has had a lot of criticism lately, but there are some good stuff that's coming out.
There's a lot of good stuff.
Stavi is out there now from Baltimore.
Blowing it up.
The 98 Rock Crew has got a lot of really good stuff that goes on. They do a lot of good work in the community. And if
a lot
we
of good
can
festivals
help,
and a lot of good concerts are coming around. But the good thing, I mean, you can go to any show at Merriweather and spend a ton of money. But the bottom line is, go support the local artists. Go support the local bands at the local bars, because they're hidden gems.
Right.
They're fantastic.
I feel like the world needs to know that there's more to Baltimore than what they hear. All right. Well, I think that's it. And I appreciate you. And we'll be back next time with another show. Stay sane, Baltimore. Thanks for listening, Baltimore. You can find us at www.sanitylounge.com. or on Instagram at sanity.lounge.
Keep listening and subscribe.
Stay sane, Baltimore.